describing some casualties to air attack.
Mm.
Sergeant Timmins.
Sergeant Timmins was killed, and another one was wounded. Can't remember his name, but that was about the only casualties in that area we had in C Squadron, anyway. And A Squadron, they were on the right of us, and C Squadron in the centre, B Squadron on the left, in the vicinity of Hammerin, was the name of that place they were in. And as I said, to give support in the area, we had two columns of three French troops equipped with one-ton trucks with an anti-tank gun on. And they always used to do their patrols under cover of darkness. They were,
you were operating in the daytime?
Yeah.
What sort of vehicles did the South Africans have?
Armoured Harrington's armoured car. I think Armoured Harrington. I don't know if that was a South African made one. But they seemed quite a good car. I think the Royals had them as well at one time. I think they were produced by South Africa. But we never had them.
You never actually saw them?
No. I think they had a Vickers machine guns on them. But as I say, I never actually got into one to see, but they were. They looked a bit like the old type Rolls Royce armoured car.
Pre-war.
Mm. But they were rather the body, I suppose, rather like a white scout car. That sort of shape with the turret on. A squarish type turret, if I remember rightly. But they were much lower than the Humber armoured car. I didn't get into one. I never drove on one at all.
Do you think it would have been an advantage to have a lower silhouette?
On the desert, I don't think that made a lot of difference. I think on the tanks it was good. I liked the old Cromwell armoured car. They were low silhouette, and also the Crusader tank. If only they were beautiful silhouette. If only they had a bigger gun on them, they would have done a lot better.
What sort of frontage were you covering in your squadron?
Oh, it was a big coverage. I think there must have been. I bet there was 20 miles per squadron. It was a large area.
What were you doing? Were you going out on patrols? Or were you
occasionally, things, all sorts, yeah. Going to RHQ, you know, for information or anything that came up, you know. Occasionally going out on a recce. Anything that came up. And you could see from where we were, you could see the enemy. And they were building up supplies, obviously, for the attack on the Gazala line. On the 16th of March, a strong force of tanks attacked the line held by the regiment, and we had to go back. Three French came with our anti-tank guns, and sort of helped to stabilise the situation, and we got back onto our own line again.
So, was this a German push, or was it them simply trying to clear the recce out of the way?
I think they were testing the ground, testing the opposition, really. I think they came sometimes when they wanted water, it'd be a small thing, but this particular one, it was much stronger, just to sort of test what opposition there would be. And of course, we dropped back. The French were there with their anti-tank guns, and they probably got a good idea of what's going on, and back they went. And that was all it was, really.
Like a war at that time of feints.
That's right, yeah. A lot of bluff and that sort of thing, I think. Testing the water. And on the 16th of March, was it at that time? Now, on the 17th of March, they were active, and they destroyed one of our armoured cars, of two troop. And the commander was Corporal Glavy. And he was badly wounded. And Trooper Thomas, his gunner, or his operator, was wounded. And the enemy reached the disabled vehicle with Glavy and the other chap in it, you see. And next thing we heard was Glavy on the phone, on the radio, asking for us to go and pick him up. The Germans had agreed to drop back, and Glavy was so badly wounded that they wanted medical aid, and would we go and pick him up? And so that was a job I had to do, was to take the ambulance to the scene and pick up Glavy and the other wounded man. And the Germans had withdrawn, as they said they would, leaving the armoured car as it was. So all we did really was to pick up the wounded and come back. We didn't do anything else because they had laid down, you know, just come and get the wounded. And so we did that.
Were the Germans visible?
No, they'd gone back. And which, that's when we went, we didn't know what to expect. But we went with an ambulance. Those big old type ambulances, you know, the old, what were they? Were they Ford? Big heavy things, you know. And put Glavy in it. Oh, anti tank gun or tank. And he was badly wounded.
Did he ever come back to the regiment?
He died.
Oh, did he?
Well, I got him back to the squadron headquarters, and by then the doctor had got there and got him in, and by then it was almost dark, and he was sort of dealing with him, and we couldn't get him any further back that night because the area was meant going through the Free French lines, which would be a bit hazardous. And there was lots of gullies all around where if you went in the dark, you'd probably
tumble in
and that sort of thing. It was too risky. So we had to leave it until the next morning at dawn to take him. And I leading him up to take him to RHQ, where they needed to go on from to hospital. And as I only just moved out of the camp, or our Liga, and gone, well, quarter of a mile. And on the other side of me pulled up a couple of Free French trucks with their guns all pointing at me, you know, obviously on the alert, thinking that we were the enemy until I could, you know, convince them who I was. And then took the thing up to RHQ, and then it was going on to the hospital from there. But he died on his way to hospital after I'd left. And he was going on. He died.
What about the other wounded man?
They got him back all right. He was all right. He wasn't so badly wounded as Glavy. So it was a nice young lad.
Did he say anything about what the Germans had said to him?
No.
Seems odd that they couldn't have given him first aid and taken him back themselves.
Well, I think they might well have been unable to get him to get treatment. You know, they probably thought, well, if we have him, we're not going to be able to get him back to where their nearest place might have been Benghazi or somewhere. You know, and he had a better chance than, and they could see that he was, you know, he'd be no longer much use as a soldier. So they thought, well, this is the best way of doing it. And obviously, of course, most of the Germans used to speak English anyway. That we found, you know, well, certainly most of their officers could speak English. And so then they thought, well, this is the answer. Which was very humane, really. But that was a sort of war it was, I think, on the desert. You know, it was a gentleman's war, more than as it got later.
Darwin himself, though, came up on
the... Oh, yes, yes.
That he wanted to be picked up.
Yes. So,
Well, I mean, do you know what the Germans have been at? Have they just been trying to prevent you, his car from getting closer to their...
Well, they might have come forward, or he might have been going forward. I'm not sure exactly why it happened, but certainly, obviously, if he was too close, or if they could get a shot at one of our armoured cars, they'd do it. You know, it was not a case of, you can keep coming on, we won't hurt you. I mean, it was still a war, you know, and it's just... But once the chap had been badly wounded, then it was a different thing. It was a humane thing, really. They'd done their bit as far as they should do as soldiers. There was a shame, really, that that happened. But in the same, I think probably the following day, on the 25th, yeah, this happened, I think, no, it was on the 21st, a large convoy of ships was going through the Mediterranean to Malta. And they wanted some attention drawn away from it, especially by the German Air Force, because there'd be a target all the way from Alexander all the way up to Malta, which I didn't know how long it would take, about 3 days, I think, wouldn't it?
I think so, yes.
And so they wanted as much air taken away as possible. So we were given a task with, I don't know how many other troops were involved. I know that the guards were involved, tanks, armoured cars, artillery, and Free French went up to attack the airfield at Martuba. So this big column, so off we went.
You know,
we went ahead with the armoured cars, like a screen.
Yeah.
That's right. And we went ahead, and of course, it was, the object was achieved, because we drew so much aircraft on the column. And although there were a number of ships that and escorts failed to reach Malta, at least we took some of the pressure off them. And as I say, once we'd got to the stage where it was not necessary to attract the air, we then came back.
Did you get to Malta?
No. But you know, I think we achieved what we were meant to do, to get as much aircraft attacking us, in order that, because it was a vital convoy going through the Med to get to Malta with petrol and supplies. But I think they lost a lot of the vehicles, a lot of the ships. I think that, was it the Barham? Was that sunk there?
It was a battleship.
Yeah, I think, I'm not sure it was sunk in the Med. I think it might have been at that time, but I know that they lost quite a number.
What about this attack?
Well, we took a lot of prisoners.
Did you?
A number of prisoners were taken. And as I say, it was just to send a column, obviously heading for Martuba, you know, and if we could got, we got as far as we could, I think, until we were told, right, now it's no longer necessary. Because we knew it was a sort of not a thing we could have held anyway. It was just a matter of trying to help the ships.
Presumably, if you'd got to Martuba, you might have been able to do some damage.
Oh, yes, yeah. I'm not sure how close we got, quite honestly. I think, you know, there's so much going on with the bombing, I don't think we could see it.
Did you know who you were up against in that area?
No, I think it's a matter of going on, and I think it only lasted about 48 hours, the whole thing. I don't know if the guns, you see, we had artillery with us, whether they could be in the position to fire on the airfield at Martuba. That might have been the...
Might be able to shell it.
That's what I mean, and that would have kept a lot of the planes out, you see, although they had airfields all along. I mean, it was only a spot in the ocean, perhaps, that we... But but we didn't know what the whole picture was, because that never used to filter through to us, apart from that they knew, we knew what the object was, and that we'd achieved it. But then we learned how many of the ships had been destroyed.
Did you run into any serious opposition on your move forward?
No more than normal, you know, that I don't think we had any casualties, but I think the strength of the column was so great that the enemy sort of backed off, you know, that it wasn't strong enough to hold us off.
So they were melting away?
They were melting as we went. Obviously, sort of, if anything, would be probably reinforcing the Martuba airfield area.
What about the? Did they have recce forces forward as we did, keeping an eye on you as you were keeping?
They also had their armoured cars.
They did.
Yes, but again, like us, I think when they saw something stronger, they dropped back in order to do their job and report. So it might have been only a thin line there. With the odd few infantry and guns.
Did you have any encounters with the screen on this push forward?
A few infantry things, you know, and that's why we got the prisoners.
But did you catch them as a squadron, or was this really picked up by the?
I think I don't know so much our squadron, but one of the other squadrons had got some. But which one I don't know, but just the. As it came back, you know, that so-and-so had taken, I think one squadron took about 17 or something like that prisoners. You know. But whether they were infantry or, I think they must have been infantry, they wouldn't have been a tank or armoured car unit. So. But all this was building up in preparation for the Battle of Knightsbridge. I think on the 26th of April, we had another big air attack.
By the enemy?
Yeah. And all at the same time as when Tor Grunsworth was killed. But every day as we went on, the enemy were getting more and more active. Know, stronger and stronger each time, and in one case I was sent out on a patrol to look for the technical adjutant, Jack Butler. He was due to report to the squadron, and he hadn't turned up, and I went out trying to find him, and we later learned he'd been taken prisoner by two German armoured cars who'd got behind our lines and picked him up. So they were doing much the same as we were. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm.
What sort of armoured cars were they using in
their hair? The general ones we saw were the eight wheel armoured cars. I think they used to have a Hotchkiss, was it the gun on? Would it have been a Hotchkiss on theirs? A 20mm they used to have on theirs, and they were much heavier than our armoured cars, but they still treated us with the same respect as we treated them, you know, it was a case of keeping a distance, but you occasionally saw them, and occasionally they'd shoot at you, but there was never any sort of mad charge, because I think they were always wary, we might have something up our sleeve,
If they were heavier, does this mean that they were less mobile in desert conditions?
Probably not. Yes, they were heavier. As I say, eight wheels, but what their performance was over the country, I would have thought they might have been better. But I think a lot...
Because they were more powerful.
I think. But a lot depended on the country, really. Some of the country you could go fast on, some no matter what the vehicle was, you had to slow down because you'd do a lot of damage to your suspension, I think.
But a heavier vehicle presumably would be more likely to bulge in
Oh, yes. Although I think the same as us, they were experienced enough to pick out the correct ground, same as we were. I mean, it doesn't take long before you can know which way to go and what not. You always know the novice because you go straight blinding on, and next thing you know, he's
bold.
He's bold, yeah.
But I mean, it would mean that, for example, in certain areas you'd be able to drive and they wouldn't if the ground was soft or softish.
I don't think any of the ground would have been too soft for one of them to go on. You see, their wheels were quite close together, and there's probably more power. They're not a longer vehicle. Their wheels are closer together.
Aren't they? They might have had a lighter pressure per square inch.
That's right.
Than
yeah.
You had, even though
that's right. Yeah, because that's spaced out on the eight.
On the eight wheels.
Yeah. So, but I never saw one bogged anyway. Although we had a number of ours occasionally. The three-ton lorries were the ones that were more likely. We used to have to sort of pull out the petrol lorries or the ammunition lorries. Because I don't think they could see the ground so easily as we could. Well, they'd be sitting in the truck, sort of looking like that. We would be higher up and could look down, and we could spot the ground, I think, far better than they could. And I don't think they were conscious so much. Some of the A echelon lorry drivers that were always up front with us, they would do, because they were always used to it. But the new ones that used to come up from way back, and that was new for them, they were the more likely ones. But we used to have two A echelon drivers, Lofty Barnes and Wilkes. They were always up the front line. Sometimes they'd go back, replenish, and back again, but there were always the two lorries with us all the time. They were more right up with the armoured cars, you know, and that was why Wilkes and was always so windy. You understand what? And Barnes was another big chap, a Yorkshire lad. Or was he from, was he a Geordie? Somewhere up there, but he was a charming sort of chap, big chap, slow, you know, easy going. And he was always up there, always reliable. And those two were always up in the front line. And you had to take your hat off to them, although everyone said, gosh. Wilkes always showed he was windy, but Barnes didn't. He was always, although he took precautions, I think.
Well, it's not the same thing.
No. But Wilkes, I say, he came through in the end. I think now we're coming up to around about the time when the Battle of Knightsbridge is coming on, and on the 1st of May we'd been up in the line for 2 months up in this area.
Were you running down again as you had done on
the... No, our casualties weren't the same. We still had the vehicles.
Why would that be?
We weren't doing the mileage.
Oh, I see.
You know, we were more or less in static positions. We weren't being shot at quite so much, bombed so much. So we weren't losing the armoured cars at the rate we were before. You know, it was a much easier time, I think. Although we were in the front line, you know, it was not so hectic and not the distance travelled like on the first push up. I mean, we did thousands of miles on the first push. And here, we'd been in the line 2 months.
And the actual supply arrangements, were they?
They were better.
Regular?
They were regular, yeah.
So you're getting water?
We were getting our water, and we had a well anyway.
Yes, you had the
and our food was coming up, and it was a far shorter supply route, because we weren't far from Tobruk. Mm-hmm. We accuracy, so everything was much, much better. We were getting better supplies, we felt better, we could, you know, and so, and on the 1st of May, we handed over to the KDGs. That's right. Mm. And we were ordered to return to Capuzzo for a rest and refit. And the news came through that then that Matt Abraham had been awarded the Military Cross. It was a railhead. All the supplies were coming into Capuzzo.
Was there anything there except for the railway?
No, it's a more or less a camp, sort of a staging area and all that sort of. No buildings or anything, but it was a spot in the desert, you know. So, no, everyone knew where Capuzzo was. Or was it up on the coast? I think it was up on the coast more. Yeah, I think. It was one of the coastal ports, if I remember rightly. No, I haven't got it there. But, it might have been somewhere in the middle of it.
Yes.
Yeah, so.
Right. So you've been pulled back again for another
rest. Yeah.
Did you know how long you were going to be back?
No. Some of the chaps were sent back on leave to Cairo again.
Yes.
And but on the 15th of May, C Squadron were in fully equipped again and refreshed. We were ordered back to the Gazala line.
So you had a fortnight.
Yeah. Yeah, but the rest of the regiment stayed where they were. And I think the other squadrons returned to Alexander and Cairo, but C Squadron were back in the line with 1st Armoured Div.
What were you doing?
Again, we were a screen, armoured car screen. And
it's rather odd, isn't it, to be deployed
separately? But we were, pardon?
Was it rather odd to be deployed separately?
Yeah. But this time we were on the right side of the Gazala line, behind the line, behind the minefields. And this was here at Gazala, where all these defensive boxes were made. You know, the Guards Brigade were in a box, all the different brigades were in a box in the middle of the desert, you know, defensive box.
Were you inside the box?
No, we were outside the box. But we patrolled forward of the boxes, you see. But it was, they were quite effective, these boxes, because they were places in the desert. It took up a vast area. All the vehicles were dug down in, and anti-tank guns and tanks, all that sort of thing, out in the desert in different places, and the enemy really could bypass them, you know, but if they attacked them, they'd be pretty formidable, although they could be attacked from the air, and they could be shelled, because they knew they were in that particular area, but they seemed to be quite effective to hold that particular line. They stretched from the north all the way down different boxes, and at the far end was Bir Hakeim, which were the Free French. Yeah.
And your job then was to sort of, was it to screen the 1st Armoured Division, or was it screening the line?
No, certain objectives. I've got one of the operation orders upstairs which shows the exactly where we were, and we could only do a limited amount because we were only 12 armoured cars, although the other armoured